The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small cap. So big welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. I'm sorry for letting you down last week, but fighting fit today, so ready to go.
Yeah, we're absolutely delighted to have you back, get back to normal service. So let's start off with a question. We've got Paul the Parrot. He's asking about the M&A potential deal for Treatt, which is a flavours and fragrances business on the UK. Its largest shareholder, Dola, which is a trade buyer, has put an offer of 305p per share on the business with a 3p dividend. What's your thoughts?
I think it's very likely, highly likely to go through, given that I think it's a fair price, fair premium. I've just been talking to Lord Lee about this, actually, and he agrees. I don't know why I didn't really see this coming, because it was pretty obvious with hindsight. I think my thinking was that they probably, I think they've ruled themselves out from bidding for it. And I thought they were kind of time barred because of the previous to and fro with another bid that Dola blocked. So, yeah, it took me a little bit by surprise, but I'm kicking myself for not having bought them, really, around the £2 level. Risk reward was very good. I just didn't, unfortunately, didn't press the button on it. So,
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it, really? It was that back end of last year, it got another trade by Natara, who was private equity backed. They put a bit of all cash at 190. Then Dola, who had about 3% stake at that time, decided to increase their shareholding to about 28% as of today, which means that they could block the scheme of arrangement because it needs 75% approval. And to get up to 28%, back in, I think it was November, December, they took a slug of stock from an ARB trader at £3.05. So they had, if they were going to offer for the business, they had to go, they couldn't go less than £3.05.
Right.
There's that annual rule, etc. I mean, I think it's all agreed with the management team. It was all agreed previously with Natara. So it wouldn't be, you never know. It's not totally insurmountable that the Natara comes back on and puts something on it, but it is looking at a fair price. It's about 11 times EBITDA for a business that, frankly, has gone through tough times and doesn't actually seem to have that much pricing power. So if I was a shareholder, yeah, I'd be pretty relieved, actually.
Yeah, I think you misspoke, Paul. I think you said the Natara bid was £1.90, but it was actually £2.90.
Sorry, well corrected. Yeah, it was definitely £2.90. Okay, good. Let's move to another bid. We've had DCC, a big energy distributor on the UK. I think it's a FTSE 350 business. Got a bid from private equity, KKR and Energy Capital Partners this week. And I think it was at £58 per share, which they've rejected. These guys have got slim margins. They basically distribute fuel oil and LPG around the country and around other sort of countries and stuff. What's your view on whether this one's going through?
Well, the difficulty was that this was announced yesterday, but they didn't actually name a price. Apparently, there was some press speculation which triggered the requirement for the RNS from DCC, but I couldn't find the press article either. However, the mystery was solved this morning with DCC, as you say, actually telling us what the price was. So it was a £58 a share bid. I don't think that's anywhere near enough of a premium to be credible. So yeah, I think that's dead in the water unless they come back with a higher figure. I haven't got the right screen in front of me, but I think it was a consortium, wasn't it, of KKR, the huge American investor, and something else, Energy?
Yeah, it was basically Energy Capital Partners.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think
in a consortium, wasn't it, with KKR?
Yeah. I mean, if you actually run the numbers, it works out about 10 times EBIT. But remember, this is quite a low margin business. Yes, it's got, hasn't got recurring revenues. It's got repeat revenues. Because obviously, you know, it basically just depends on how often people want petrol and they want power for their houses and stuff. But it has got inflation protection because it can just pass those costs on. As I say, it's a very low margin type business. And I guess the question mark comes down to what would be the synergies of putting this business with the Energy Capital Partners energy distribution. And I think you're probably right. 10 times EBIT for a company that's actually grown quite well historically says to me that actually they're paying a standalone valuation rather than paying any synergies away. So it's probably a bit cheeky. If they're interested, they're probably going to have to come back.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's not a proper bid premium. It's all very well saying, oh, we'd like to buy this company, but you've got to cough up, you know. So I think they need to improve that offer to make it more credible, I think. But it's got quite a fragmented shareholder base of various institutions, I noticed, that DCC has. So at a very modest premium, they might struggle to get enough acceptances, I suspect.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Okay, we've got a question actually just on the, I think it is on the M&A theme, from Ben Sharman. He's done a good highlight. He's talking about TT Electronics because D-Bay, which is a big private equity, they own, according to him, 26%. And they actually blocked Cycor's bid last year at 150, I think.
Oh, yeah, that makes it well.
So I guess do you think this one potentially could come back in play? Because, you know, basically where you've had a block bid that finally goes through, you might get a bit of something similar happening at TT Electronics.
Yeah, it's possible, isn't it? Yeah, here we are. I've found my notes for it. D-Bay confirms that it does not intend to bid for TTG, but will vote against the current bid from Cycor. So, yeah, I suppose I wonder if D-Bay might just be biding their time to put in their own cheeky bid. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. Yeah.
Well, I think they did actually. I think D-Bay did put an offer in at the time of about 120 or 130. So I think you're right. If you're looking for other businesses that potentially could do a treat, then I would suspect TT Electronics actually, Ben, is a very good potential opportunity.
It's very comparable, isn't it? Yeah, I found my notes here. So, yeah, D-Bay offered £1.22, £1.27 and £1.30. But Cycor basically offered £1.55, but that was all cash bid of £1.50, which D-Bay then blocked. So, yeah, very, very, very similar situation to Treat. Well spotted, Ben.
Yeah. Okay, let's move to your lovely gambling stock that I know you like, Evoke, which owns William Hill.
He's being sarcastic, everyone.
And 888. Anyway, it got a bid last week from another gambling company. I think it's a lottery provider based out in France, from Bally's Interlot, at an all-share deal of 50p per share. The shares are currently 39p, so they don't think this is going through. But what's your take on it?
Well, I had a quick look at Bally's Core, isn't it? They're New York Stock Exchange listed, BALY.
No, no, it isn't. No, it's the Bally, it's the Bally Interlocked, which is actually listed in France.
I'm going to have to correct that, because I've been looking at the wrong company. Oh dear, that's embarrassing. So no, my idea was that Bally's looked practically insolvent, but I'm looking at the wrong Bally's. So oh dear.
Okay, well, yeah. I mean, just to let you know, there probably isn't that much difference from what you looked at before, because Bally Interlot, their market cap of about €2 billion. They've got 1.5 billion of net debt, which is an EBITDA multiple of 3.5 compared to Evoke's net debt to EBITDA of 5.2. Now, I did look at Evoke's recent trading update, and it did seem to be in line. But the problem with it is that they've got that cliff edge change in the online gambling tax in the UK from the 6th of April, from I think it's 21% online gambling tax to 40%, which cripples the business, basically.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to know to a certain extent, but clearly this business has been on the market for quite some time. And to get an all-cash share bid says to me that the bargaining position of the Evoke board isn't high at the moment.
It's not a cash bid, is it? It's an all-paper bid.
Yeah, no, sorry, I meant it. Sorry, an all-stock bid. You're right.
Right.
I meant an all-stock bid. Yeah, well spotted again.
You're doing that thing where you say the opposite of what you mean.
I know. Yeah. No, I'm doing it to test you, Paul. You see?
I see.
No, I'm not. It's my own mistakes. Okay, so effectively, yeah, all cash. Sorry, all stock deal. But essentially, I don't think the board are in a the Evoke board are in a particularly strong position to negotiate this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, because Evoke's balance sheet is absolutely diabolical. Negative net tangible asset value of 2.1 billion. And yeah, I've got a net debt figure of 1.8 billion, 5x EBITDA. So yeah, it's in a bad place, Evoke is, isn't it? And as you say, it's already said a big hit to profit is coming from the UK budget. I think it said it can mitigate about half of the 130 million cost of the budget changes, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it withdrew medium-term targets. But that was back in November. I haven't seen an update on that from Evoke. So I would imagine that remains, yeah. So it's a financially distressed situation, isn't it? So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's 5.2. Its leverage is 5.2 EBITDA at the moment.
Yeah.
But that's on historical numbers. Mm. When the EBITDA goes down next year because of the online, if that leverage is going up.
yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, it's got some valuable brands. I believe, am I right in saying it owns William Hill and 888 Poker, I think?
It owns 888, which is what it was originally. And then it bought the retail shops of...
Ah, right.
I think it's got the licensing for the online of William Hill outside the US.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, but yeah, anyway, yeah. Just, anyway, it will be interesting to see. Okay, we've got Tim on a similar vein to who we had basically with TT Electronics. We've got Tim asking about Auction Technology, which also has a 26% shareholder, Fitzwalter, that put a bid on the business at £4 per share, which was actually rejected by the other shareholders. Is this one going to come back on the hammer, so to speak, because it's obviously all things auctioned. So is it going to go on again itself?
I don't know, but that'd be speculation, really. But it certainly looks, again, the readers are really on the ball today, aren't they? They're coming up with all these interesting ideas. I mean, I bought some ATG when it was just over £3. But I did sell them when it shot up to £3.70, because that move happened again when the stock market was really bad, which did look, you know, the price was going up when the market was going down. Kind of tells you that somebody's stake building, doesn't it? So it wouldn't surprise me at all, actually, if ATG returned, £4 or maybe even slightly higher bid. But I was happy to bank my profits at about £3.70 and move on. So, good luck to people who are still holding it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Fitzwalter have been adding to their position, haven't they, over the last few months, increasing it to 26. It's a blocking state for anybody else, for starters, on a scheme of arrangement anyway.
Yeah.
But that just says to me it's a matter of time before they decide to put another bid on it and try and take it out. The problem they have, unfortunately, is the business does seem to be improving. And I did see that last trading update, their arts and antiques division actually performed pretty well. I think they had about 8% like for like. It's the thing that I didn't like about it was that acquisition they did, which had levered the balance sheet up, and it was Chairish, which wasn't an auction house. It wasn't anything to do with auctions. It was basically just a retailer. Online retail, which I just thought it's a low. They paid a high price for a lower quality business. Didn't seem to make sense to me.
Yeah, and I can't remember which fund manager it was, but one of your fund manager interviews, the chap gave a good overview of ATG and similar sort of thing. He pointed out as well a recent update, 20th of April. The net debt is coming down now. It's dropped from 2x EBITDA to 1.8x in 3 months, which is pretty good, isn't it? And inline current trading, inline outlook. So, yeah, you're right. I think over time, the fundamentals of MTG do seem to be improving now, don't they?
Yeah, good. Okay, we've got Varun Kapoor. He's basically asking about, given we've now got an offer on Treat, are we going to get an offer for Tate and Lyle, which is a sweetness. It basically has stevia and also has sort of like performance food ingredients that help the flavour and the feel of food in people's mouth. They make this big acquisition last year, I think, in America. Took a lot of money off the shareholders to do that. The shares have performed badly. They've been hit by sort of poor sentiment to food ingredients plus the tariffs. Is this one also going to get a bid interest, do you reckon, Paul?
I don't know about bid interest. I mean, everything's up for sale, basically, isn't it, at the moment? I mean, practically every day we're getting takeover bids. This is why I want to stay in the market, because, you know, if you sit on the sidelines waiting for the Strait of Hormuz to reopen, you know, there's no sign that these bids are stopping because of the geopolitical tensions. If anything, it might trigger more bids. So, Tate & Lyle shares are really low compared with the historic valuation, but I'm not a particular fan of this group. But yeah, here we are. CP Kelco was the big acquisition, wasn't it, that Tate & Lyle did. So I'm not madly keen on it. I think, didn't you buy a few recently or a while back last year?
Yeah, disclosure, I own the shares. I mean, I mean, they're basically at the current levels, they trade on 6x EBITDA. Given that Treat has been taken out at 11 times, there's a big, and it's got much better profitability than Treat in terms of pricing power. I mean, just to give you an indication, I think Treat has got margins of, I think they're high single digits. I think they're about 8%, if I remember rightly, whereas Tate and Lyle have got margins of 13-14%. So they've got certainly, you know, better scale and more pricing power for their foods, etc. And they should be very well placed for new functional foods, particularly as people move on to things like GLP-1s, because now it's up to the food manufacturers to essentially, you don't have to sell them volume of massive food. You sell them sort of quality of food and flavor of food, which should work perfectly for them. And last time I interviewed the Millses from Harwood, they had a similar question on Tate and Lyle, and he said they're a sitting duck. So I would say if any private equity wanted to put a bid on them, then I don't believe there's going to be too much, as long as it's reasonable, then there's going to be too much resistance from its shareholders, who I think are a bit cheesed off with what's going on.
Very good. Looking at the broker forecast graph, I mean, Tate & Lyle, it's just been a continuous downward reduction in the earnings forecast. So it looks as if the company is sort of has become a serial disappointer over the last couple of years, I would say, on earnings.
Yeah. Okay, good. We've got a popular share that is always in the crosshairs of M&A. We've got Traxys. Emma's asking about it. Now, I know we chatted to their management team this week. They came out with their half-year results, which were all in line, in fact, pretty good. And the outlook was in line as well. What was your take from our conversation with David and Andrew?
Well, I was expecting a profit warning because that was what the market was signalling with the share price weakness. And then they came out with these nice, pretty strong H1 results. Nothing in the outlook that was untoward. I think, you know, reading between the lines, they sounded pretty comfortable with the forward visibility, and it says that in the RNS as well. So I just don't understand the valuation. You know, you've got £26 million of net cash at Traxys, which is what? That's just over a quarter of the market cap is its own net cash. They've clearly got optionality in terms of what they do with that cash. And I think they've said that they are looking at more acquisitions. They're pretty disciplined at the acquisitions they do. I think it's a bargain. I don't hold any personally, but I really am scratching my head over the valuation. And management kind of said the same. They said, "Well, we're just controlling the controllables and doing what we can to grow the business." And you know, the market, the share price mystifies us really as well.
No, I'm with you. I think you know, this is a regulated industry. It supplies, you know, technology, software and services into the rail sector, both in the UK, US and increasingly Germany, where they just made that acquisition, didn't they? Booty, I think it was. And it was actually quite a good transaction in terms of the financials, even though they didn't disclose what they were at that time. The business is profitable, and it was a pretty reasonable multiple they actually paid. So it gives them that beachhead into Europe. And I'm with you. I think their direction of travel is to sharpen up that portfolio, dispose of a few non-core basically parts of the business, bulk up in sort of software and services outside of, say, the UK where they need to. It's still tough. He did say that basically both of them said it's still tough with Network Rail and the train operating company supplying the software into it. So don't expect that to avoid the and run away with things. That's going to be pretty much flat or uphill for the next few years. The key question comes down to, if you're going to play devil's advocate, is what happens with the train operating companies when they're all being merged into Great British Railways by October 2027. Now, historically, and this is, don't shout about it to the train bye-byes, but most of them have been pretty incompetent for the last sort of like so many years, and they all buy individually off Traxys. Now, if they did actually ever get their act together, Great British Railways, and have central procurement, then you could see a time whereby the head honcho in their purchasing team decides to put out to tender a one and all contract for all train operating companies to run their operations and planning software. Now, yeah. If you add all those together, I think the exposure for Traxys is probably about 30%, 25-30% of the business is from all the train companies. And if that happens, then you're probably going to get some, at that moment, there's going to be a moment of truth in terms of whether they're going to be the incumbent and whether they're going to continue winning. So that would be my only sort of like question mark. I did ask that question of David, not this time, but 6 months ago. And he said, look, they're, you know, we expect it to be like the NHS, where you basically supply each health NHS trust, and there won't be central procurement, which could well be right. So he did bat that one back 6 months ago. Okay. But that'd be my only take. If you did have somebody decent there centrally in their procurement, what would they do in terms of just having one software provider for all of the Great British Railways?
Hmm. Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that, but I've always worked on the basis that the core revenues were very, very sticky at Traxys, which is what we've been told in the past, because it's so complex. It, you know, the software has been adapted and specialized and perfected over decades, I believe. So, but no, it's good to flag out the risks as well, Paul. Yeah.
Okay, good. We've got Lost in the Fog. He's asking about one I own, actually, which is ActiveOps, which is a software company that helps big, complex businesses manage their back office services. So if it's like a big bank or a healthcare insurance in the UK or the US in particular, increasingly, actually, the US, I think that's their biggest market. If they want to basically make sure all their staff are synced in and working well together, both on in the office and hybridly, and also if they want to actually bring in agents like robots, then they'll sync in all of that into a virtual stroke real life workforce and manage it for them. They came out with a trading update which was very good, and the shares sort of like were pretty much flat line from that, and the reason is because they have this contract which left. I don't know what your thoughts on ActiveOps are. Is
Yeah, I quite like the business, but I just, and we had, what was it, 21st of April, we had a trading update, adjusted EBITDA marginally ahead of expectations. So you've got forecasts of 2.6p for March 26 and 3.9p for March 27. Well, if I put that on, say, 20 times, I'm getting to about 78p, but the share price is more than double that. So I just can't get my head around, I don't understand why the price is where it is. To me, it's probably, I wouldn't really be interested even at half the current share price.
Yeah, it's quite interesting that, because I think you look at it on a numbers now basis rather than a forward private type market valuation, which is what I do.
Yeah.
Because these are 90% gross margins. Their ARR is growing at 25% organic each year. They're investing in their business to increase their customers. And this company should be perfectly placed to help businesses integrate both human and agent or AI agents into their workforce and maximize the return they get to it. And effectively what they're doing is just on a huge land grab. And they lost a contract about 12 months ago in a large UK bank, which they won back because the bank realized their biggest competitor couldn't actually do what they did. So it shows you how good the software, the contract that they lost now, which is they told that they to disclose that they were actually lost, was because of the acquisition they made in Lighten, which is a Australian business. It was about £2 million pounds, I think it was, turnover contract. But they knew about that was at risk before they bought it, and that's why they did the sale and purchase agreement to adjust the consideration if that was actually lost. So they knew about that particular at the time. So it isn't as though anything was a sort of like shown what their software's like. Their software was absolutely fantastic. So when you come back to valuation and you run the slide rule through 25% ARR. Going forward, in fact, a lot less than that, the management team are hoping to get to from 40 million type of or 45 million sales to about 100 million in about 3 to 4 years. They're going, this is like a rocket ship. And then you'll get 25% EBITDA margin. So they'll be a member of the 50 club. There'll be 25% sales growth plus 25% EBITDA margin. Remember the 50 club. And if you basically, you know, put 100 million, you know, turnover, then if you basically got 100 million, and then you know, let's put it a 4x sales, that's 400 million market cap. And I'm just trying to work out what their their share count is. It's 72 million. So if you had basically 400 million divided by 72, you get £5.50. So that's how the market is. Difference from what that, if you look at the future and you look at the trajectory, which is effectively a leap of faith, no doubt about it, how well positioned they are compared to what you do, which is looking at the historical stuff and then saying,
I'm looking at the 1 year forecast, which is 3.65p. Although, admittedly, if you go on the March 28 forecast. That is up again. So the forecasts are growing at 37-38%. So 5.1p there. So if you put that on a P of about 35, 2 years forecast earnings, you get to around the current share price. So it's, I get where you're coming from. You know, rapid growth companies, you put on a high PE of forward forecast, but it's even on that basis, I can't really see any upside on the current share price.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I just, as I say, it's just the way you look at it and the way I look at it. We look at it different ways.
We're both looking at forecasts and then applying a multiple to it. So I don't see that as being different.
The difference is you're using EPS adjusted for this year, whereas I'm looking at on a future basis what I think the potential of the business is on a sales multiple, and I get to about £5.50.
I would never value anything on a sales ratio.
Exactly. So yeah. And I know Canaccord, who do the same as me on a, you know, as a potential upside, they do a similar multiple of about 4x. They get 28p per share EPS in about, you know, 2028, 2029. And then they get they get basically a £7 target price. So all I would say is that it all depends on, I personally use the financials to give me a feel about the current price and what's baked into the price in terms of expectations. And then I compare it to where I think the business can get to. And I think you'll see upgrades going forward rather than where the current guidance is. And therefore, on a fast growing 90% gross margin type business, you can get much, much more. I mean, I've owned these for about 3 or 4 years. I've not sold any at all. It's my second largest position. And the shares are bound to go up and down, as they always do, like Interseed, like Illico, which we'll get onto in a moment. And you've just got to live through those volatilities and be prepared to say, I'm not going to nickel and dime it. And basically, if I think it's, you know, just gone up a bit, I'm going to take the top off. If you actually want to make some serious bread with long-term winners, if you believe they're long-term winners, then you've just got to prepare. The price to pay is you've got to take volatility, which is what I'm doing.
Exactly. I mean, although the forecast, those numbers you were talking about there, absolutely exponential growth. So if that happens, £7 a share, bring it on. But you know, that is an extraordinarily aggressive level of earnings growth, isn't it? But if you think that's going to happen, then the shares are worth paying up for, aren't they?
We have a different view on Eagle Eye as well, which is basically the promotions business, because I think that's got a chance to get to 100 million on, you know, basically turnover as well over the next 3 to 4 years. And I know you're more cautious on it, which is understandable. Let me just put equal eye on. These guys basically do software for all the big retailers to be able to do personalized promotions. And the shares, despite being impacted by the agentic AI problem, have actually recovered all of it back.
Yeah, they have. It's been pretty remarkable. So, no, good call on that one, Paul. The market agrees with you. So, yeah, you're bold. You bought on the big profit warning, and it's doubled from there. So, yeah, hats off to you.
Well, I wasn't doing that. The reason why I thought it'd be quite interesting is because they've got a similar type turnover, 45 million. And when we chatted to their CEO and the CFO, they think in about 3 to 5 years, they can get to 100 million sales, etc. Now, they're not that profitable at the moment, as we know, because you keep mentioning it, that they're not profitable because they lost that contract. Yeah.
Yeah.
They trade at about 2.4, 2.5 times sales. Now, I know you don't use it, but I do as a ballpark. Mm-hmm. And just to give you an indication, there was a company very similar to Eagle Eye last week, which was bought by Adyen, the payments company. It was a bigger business in Europe, and they paid 12 times sales.
Gosh,
I'll just repeat that again. They paid 12 times sales for this, yeah, compared to 2.4. So all I'm saying is that there's a huge, when I look at businesses in terms of technology and software, I look at what, if it was going to be sold into the private markets, that would be the upside. That's what you're playing for. To a strategic buyer, these businesses are worth much more than putting a 20 times PE on next year's EPS guidance. It's the strategic value of it. And that's how I get it. I know we look at it differently, but that's how I do it anyway.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate different methods of valuing companies, and we all go with whatever we're comfortable with, don't we? So, I mean, it'd be interesting to know what the operating margin on that company that was acquired at 12 times sales, what percentage profit margin was that making? I bet it was super high.
Yeah, it probably was. Yeah, I bet you was. But that shows you the potential, doesn't it, going forward? Once you get the scale benefits with 90% gross margins, you don't need to increase your fixed costs and it just becomes a money printing machine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, just to clarify, I think Eagle Eye is a pretty good business, actually. Just for me, valuation doesn't really work at the moment. But each to our own, that's what makes a market, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, we've got one of your subscribers. I know Rob Day wanted us to chat about Alico, which is basically a build tech software provider which goes into contractors and to house builders and construction guys to be able to do real-time digital twins of the infrastructure that they're all buildings they're actually constructing. Anyway, they came out with full-year results, which are very good. I think the ARR was up 29%. Their like-for-like sales accelerated from H1 into H2, and they were 14%. Their EBITDA margins are about, if I remember rightly, are about 25%, 26%. So actually, in the second half, they were a member of the 40% club. The shares went up, not surprisingly, initially, but then came down yesterday.
Yeah.
What was your take on it?
I really like this, actually. These numbers now are starting to work for me. I know we've, again, had a bit of a valuation gulf on this one before, but I thought these numbers were really, really good. And I actually moved it up a notch from amber to amber green. So that's 3-star to 4-star out of 5. The revenue growth was 20% and 11% of that was organic. So they have made, I think, 2 acquisitions, I think. As you say, 29% ARR growth is really, really good. I'm not going to argue with you on this one at all, Paul. Actually, this does meet my valuation criteria. I think it's good. Thumbs up from me. Yeah. And net cash balance sheet as well. It looks really good, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and the ARR, sorry, they're not ARR, basically the recurring revenues are about 81% of total sales now. So it's past all that transition. The gross margins are 90%, so you get that, you know, scalable. 80% of the business, they've made a small disposals. 80% of the business now, or more than 80%, is totally this build tech software because they sold this Views software in Germany. That should benefit the profits this coming year. Their NRR, which is their net retention revenues, was 110%. That was, which is excellent. Anything above 100% is excellent. But actually the active ops was 119%, which was just outstanding. Wow. As you mentioned, the balance sheet's absolutely fine. Now, something that the market I don't think has seen yet, and this is where the shares went down yesterday, because I think Investors Chronicle put a note out which wasn't that positive. I couldn't access it, but I just saw it and they went down on the back of it. But the one thing the market I don't think has picked up yet, okay, is that they did 10.2 million EBITDA last year in 25. The consensus is only 10.7 million. You know, EBITDA for this year. I just can't see them doing anywhere near that low. I just think it's going to start with 11 as a minimum, and I could absolutely see them doing 12 plus. So, and that wouldn't be racy guidance either. So I think this has got a number of upgrades coming this year, or alternatively, somebody takes a shot at these, because a lot of people have actually, you know, basically bid for these over the last 10 years, and the price, the clearing price just hasn't worked. But to give you an indication of valuation to a private buyer, it trades at 2.1 times sales. This one was a minimum. It was a minimum, should go for basically 4 times sales. It trades at about 8 times EBITDA, this, you know, Alico. Transactions go at 15 to 20 times EBITDA easily, okay? So yes, it's a bit smaller, but the retention, they hardly ever lose customers ever. It's just the retention rate is absolutely top draw. So if somebody was going to put a strategic, you know, bid on these, then I think it would probably go for double what it'd be £2.50 plus, in my view. But you know, I've held them for what, 11, 12 years now, so it hasn't happened yet. But again, there's been a lot of volatility, but just to come back to Rob's question, I mean, you know, I'm not selling. I'm just holding them because I think they're too cheap.
Yeah, I think they're for the first time in ages, I can actually agree with you on the valuation here. You know, there's no arguing over the fact that it is a very good business with a very good long-term track record. You've got lovely growth here. But for me, I've got to be able to buy things at the right price as well. And I think with it ticks that box now currently. So yeah, I think it looks lovely.
Okay, good. We've got one which potentially may well be in your price bucket here. We've got Oliver Selling. He's asking for your views on Warpaint, which is the Challenger Cosmetics business that came out with, I think, was results this week that were not bad, actually, but I think their outlook was a bit damaged, particularly year-to-date sales to April, which I think on a like-for-like basis were down 20%. Anyway, putting all the valuation is in the pan at the moment. So putting all that together, how do you see it?
Well, I think, yeah, that's a good summary, actually, Paul. Yeah, it was the first 4 months of calendar 2026. Warpaint said revenues down 20%, which is a hell of a lot. They did put in some good stuff in the outlook statement about the H2 weighting. They're expecting a bigger than usual H2 weighting, but they did then give some evidence for why that might happen, including a larger than expected Christmas orders that's been received from Walmart. So it's a mixture of positives and negatives. You've got a strikingly good balance sheet at Warpaint. So over 10% of the market cap is net cash. Plus, they've hardly got any trade creditors as well. So, you know, if you were to sort of, so there, it looks like they're paying up front for product to get the keenest prices. They're pretty positive about margins as well. They're expecting higher margins. So it's quite a mixed bag, isn't it, really? So I concluded overall, still leaning slightly positively on Warpaint, but I think the H2 weighting and the soft year-to-date things have put me off wanting to get involved right now.
Yeah.
So probably, go on, Paul.
Yeah. Over to you. I think optically the headline decline in April year-to-date like-for-like sales of 20% is harsh, to be perfectly honest. And the reason why I say it is because if we cast our mind back to last year, we had Liberation Day tariffs on the 2nd of April. And right, what happened, what we know before was there was a hell of a lot of product across a whole lot of industries which were forward ordered going into those liberation tariffs. So they stuffed the supply chain in Q1 2025. And so we're comparing effectively a a normal Soak soft period with a really, really, really strong first 3 months.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And then they said in their statement that April had beaten the previous April, which is not a surprise because they'd stuffed the flipping channel with sales. So it's difficult to know on a like for like basis, you know, how much what it is down. All I would say is that I'm not surprised they're going to have an H2 waiting because of the what they had last year, which was just like so mad, and they've got Christmas and stuff. So given it's on, as you rightly point out, you know, less than 9x forward P with a decent balance sheet, if you're ever going to go into Challenger Cosmetics, I would go now where there's blood on the street, to be perfectly honest.
That's a very interesting point, Paul, actually. So, yeah, as I say, I am leaning more positively than negatively on it, but to me, it just doesn't strike me as a compelling buy at the moment, whereas the context is that we've got so many other probably more compelling buying opportunities being offered to us at the moment.
Yeah, good. Okay, we've got another one from one of your subscribers, Jazz. He's asking about Seraphim Investment Trust, which is probably the only or one of the few sort of investment companies that solely concentrate on space exploration, the final frontier. It has about 24 holdings, I think, which of the top four are most valuable. It just did, I think it's asked for an equity raise of £350 million. Pounds. I'm not sure what the market cap is of it. Just have you ever had a look at this one at all? Jazz was asking.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, Cockney Rebel got me onto this one. He's been talking about it very enthusiastically for a while. So I did watch, I did read some research on it and read the most recent results and watched a webinar. I think it looks a really interesting story, doesn't it? For sure. So yeah, I like it. I haven't bought any though. I'm wondering if I've missed the boat on it, I haven't really fully done research on it, but I think it looks very interesting, I have to say, yeah.
Yeah, I think the one thing I would look at it, Jazz, is that look at the, for investment trusts, you've got to look at the net asset value, and even if you uplift, I think they were talking about one of their fourth biggest investments, I think, is which basically used to do those Wimbledon tennis, Hawkeye, and it's looking for an IPO. So if you put in an uplift for the IPO into its NAV, you get to about 145p compared to a share price of £2. So you're paying a big premium already, you know, basically for their investments. And the other thing I would also add, the fees are not cheap from the management team.
Good point. Yeah, I spotted that too.
I think they're about 1% per annum management fee, but they have basically a performance fee of 15% above the hurdle, which is 8% per annum. So essentially, if these guys are doing really well out of the investment. And also, if you want to subscribe to these new fundraise of £350 million, most of it's going to institution, but they are reserving quite a bit for retail interest. Now, they're giving C shares, which are not ordinary shares, okay? And they haven't said what the conversion price is, other than saying it will happen going forward as and when we deploy money. And we're going to segregate those assets that money has bought into the C shares ownership. So it's a bit of a sort of like a mist of what price you're paying. I suspect you will pay effectively the equivalent of the share price at when they convert into ordinary shares, because that would make sense to both the C shares and the ordinary shares. But it isn't an easy one, this one, to actually get a proper picture. All I would say is that there's a lot of good news priced into that portfolio. True. They do own a lot of very good businesses. I think the number one is communications between satellites to allow people to hand over if you're on the Earth with a handset to seamlessly move from a geospatial to a low orbit. And they've got another one which positions satellites into low orbit. I think the final one is that they use this X-ray technology to get through cloud cover so you can still look at the ground, which is another big joke. But frankly, space is risky. We've got to understand space is risky. But given what Elon Musk has done with SpaceX, reducing the cost of getting lifting equipment and satellites into the state massively down compared to what it used to be, there's going to be a lot more work going on. So I personally wouldn't go for it, but hey, I've missed out on in the last year, it's gone from about 50p to £2. So
Yeah, no, those are all very, very good points, actually. And, you know, it looks really, it's exciting, isn't it? It's a great story, and there's a lot of substance behind it as well. I think the biggest investment, this is the one where I think the German and I think the Finnish military have signed up, haven't they? And I mean, it does look a very, very exciting thing, but yeah, I'm probably not going to buy any personally because I just don't really know how to value it.
Yeah. Okay, we've got a question from ATK-DK, which I think is Stephen, I think his name is. His pictures are similar anyway. I've seen him on social media. He's asking about Telecom Plus, that basically aggregates all the utilities for a household, the broadband, electricity, water, and any other sort of, and your mobile bills all together, and sells them to its customers. And I think it's got about a million, if I remember rightly, just from the top of it, it's got about a million subscribers in the UK, and it's aiming to get to 2 million. But the shares have performed pretty poorly, actually, of late. Any quick thoughts on this one?
Quick thoughts on this one? Yes, it reported numbers this Tuesday, didn't it? For the full year, it's a trading update to March, and we couldn't understand why the shares dropped so heavily on the day. They dropped 17% to £11.80. It was at the bottom end of the previous guidance range for profit, but it was quite a tight range, 132 million to 138 million. So saying that you're at the lower end of that quite tight range, in itself wouldn't justify a 17% fall. So I think possibly the talk about rebasing the divvies might have put off a few people, because it's mainly an income stock, isn't it? It's on about a 7% yield. And we're questioning, is the growth slowing? The outlook narrative was a little weak, we thought, but couldn't really get my head around why it dropped so heavily on that update. So have you got any ideas, Paul?
I think this whole sector, I mean, it's basically what it is. It's a aggregator, as you say, of utilities. And so yeah. But it doesn't own that those utilities. It basically just is like a reseller. I think like moneysupermarket.com, like Compare the Market, this whole sector, I just wouldn't go near it. I think they're all value traps, just because eventually, and they are getting better, they're not as good yet, we know that, but eventually I will have an agent in my pocket and I will say, you know, basically just tell me what the best deal is and how to do it and go ahead. And that is 2, 3, 4 years. But we value businesses on their earnings into perpetuity. And I think this, at some moment, there's going to be a moment of truth for these businesses that act as intermediaries and work on the people on the friction cost, because it's at the moment, it's still so painful to basically select your insurance. You just go to these default price comparison websites just because it's easy, but it won't be difficult going forward. It will be easy with an AI agent. And anyway, that's just my view. I personally think they're all value traps. I wouldn't go near them.
That's interesting. I mean, I think it was Money Supermarket that reported today or yesterday, didn't they? And there wasn't any sign of it being eroded yet. But as you say, the business model could be turned on its head if AI achieves the level of sophistication that a lot of people seem to think it might do. So, yeah, I mean, I've never owned the share myself. And I noticed with just been following Rightmove as well, because we've been following they've all taken a huge hit, haven't they? That hasn't really bounced, has it, from the big sell-off?
And one thing which has hit them also is not only the fears over agentic AI, which I think are real and a matter of time, but also the input costs, because they used to spend a lot of benefit on the cost per click basis from Google and from Meta. And what's happened is that Meta's changed its algorithms to basically, right, which has annoyed a shed load of people and put the cost up. I think it's undermined people like LBG Media with Meta changing its algorithms.
Oh yes, that's really gone off the boil, hasn't it? Yeah.
And then we had basically Google just taking down the blue links and just prioritizing basically its AI, you know, Gemini, that's the answer engine, and sponsored blue links. So it just means that there's less to bid on, and therefore the price has gone up. So these businesses are getting whacked both ends, basically. They've got higher costs and potentially in the future lower revenues. I just think they're going to get squeezed. It just wouldn't be a place I'd want to go.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be what's making these share prices go down and stay down, isn't it, really? So yeah, I think you're right, really. If market sentiment is that against these type of intermediaries, probably best to just steer clear, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's go to the high street, which is also suffering. Not the retail parks, but the high street. Let's go to Card Factory. Graham's asking about it. These guys, I think they're probably the UK's number one card shop business. Everybody's probably been in it to get their wife a Valentine or whatever like that. But anyway, what's your take on it?
Well, I just think it's completely the wrong price. So I'm very, very bullish on this. We had, I do own personally, I've held for quite a while. The results were fine, I thought. You know, because of the share price being so weak, I was expecting another profit warning, because we did have a profit warning a few months ago from Card Factory. The forecast basically would drop from 14p to about 12p. So not a disaster. They delivered in line. Actually, the EPS was a tiny bit below, but the PBT was in line. So that's you know, just adjustments on the tax or whatever. So as far as I'm concerned, that is in line. Profit was down about 15% year on year. So it's not, you know, I'm not saying it's trading well, but the striking thing is that they've maintained the dividends. In fact, they've grown the dividends for the full year now to 5p, which is a yield of not far off 8%. Plus, it's announced a £15 million buyback because it's generating surplus cash over and above the dividend payment. So, I mean, I think it's extraordinarily cheap. You're now looking at a PE of 5, and the outlook statement was in line, and they're fully hedged on their Forex and their energy costs. Funky Pigeon acquisition is going well and will, of course, deliver group earnings growth. I think they bought that for a fabulous price from WH Smith. And they did flag an H2 weighting again, but that's normal for this business. There's nothing untoward about that. And I'm amazed these shares are below £1. I think £1 to £1.20 would be an attractive price. And they're 64p. I think it's absolutely bonkers.
Is the post office's incompetence undermining the business model? Because when I get a letter or something through the post, it's typically a month after it was actually put in there. Yeah, it's absolutely terrible. The prices are quid, so you get it costs a lot, and the deliveries are rubbish. I mean, they had that big sting, didn't they, by the BBC about 2 months ago?
Yeah.
Where they went round a bunch of posties and they all said, look, we've been told to unprioritize it. We do parcels, but we're not taking any letters. Forget it. And that's the service I'm getting. So if I was actually wanting to send a birthday card to my dad or to my mother-in-law or whatever like that, then I'd probably be posting it a month in advance and to make sure it gets there. And if it did hit them the following day, then they'd think, this is crazy, I'm getting it a month in advance. I mean, it just is like, it just isn't a reliable service. I just wonder whether it's undermining Card Factory out of its control.
Possibly, but the business is trading in line. So, you know, they're not saying that things are getting worse. They're actually, it was very reassuring, the results and the outlook. I mean, I post both the cards to friends and family and haven't had any delivery problems. So I don't know how much of an issue that is. But I think a lot of it as well is cards are given for many more occasions now, aren't they? The card industry is quite clever at inventing new, you know, whatever day. And I think a lot of them are just given by hand. You know, you can't, e-cards never really took off, did they? If you remember 10, 15 years ago, you used to occasionally receive an e-card and they fizzled out almost completely. I've only got one friend now who regular as clockwork every year sends me an e-card. So I think physical cards are more resilient than people think, actually. And of course, Card Factory is gifting products shop. You know, the cards get people in the door and a lot of them are loss leaders almost. But then they're expanding the range of other, you know, attractive little gifts to put with the celebrations type products. So I see Card Factory as not just about cards. And I just find the valuation extraordinarily compelling. And I'm getting paid 8% to wait for it to re-rate.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, and also, I mean, we saw, was it a few years ago, Clinton Cards went bust. That's gone through the system, obviously. But actually, the old WH Smith's business in the UK, TJ Jones.
Isn't it? Good point.
It is, that's going bust. Well, it's almost dead cert to be bust. So you probably will see some competition coming out the market again. So that
yeah, great point.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's stay on the high street, which we know is a bit tough, particularly for Shoe Zone. If you're selling discount shoes, they came out with another shocking trading update that went from profit down to a loss, I think. They are really struggling. But they are, again, they're on the high street rather than the retail parks.
Actually, no, I think a lot of them are in the retail parks, Paul. I think they did, they have done at least a partial shift into the big sheds.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a disappointment. I wouldn't say it was a disaster. Here we are, I found it. Wednesday 22nd, so that was last week, last Wednesday. Yeah, you're right. Profit warning, blamed on tough macro. But the shares didn't actually drop that much. So I do wonder now, it was around 51p then. Do you know what they are now?
Yeah, they're saying 48.
Oh, so it's dropped a little bit more. And the market cap now is so small. And it's got an okay balance sheet. And it's, you know, £1 million loss or something is not... here we are, between £1 and £2 million loss before tax. Well, adding back the depreciation charge, that's probably going to be cash flow neutral, isn't it? Or even slightly positive. So I wouldn't say it's a disaster at Shoe Zone. And your market cap's now only about 20 million. So it's sort of coming into vague possible punting territory, I think, isn't it? I can't see you buying it. And actually, I think I've talked myself out of buying it as well.
Yeah, I think you might be right. It's got more exposure now to retail parks than the high street. But
I think it does, yeah.
I would just ask, what's its USP, you know? And the answer to that is, I don't know. May have had the USP sort of 20 years ago, but...
Well, the Chinese are selling direct now as well. I've been saying this for a few years, and I got a lot of criticism from people. But I think that must be denting their, taking a little bit of their market share away. Which, of course, for a retailer with largely fixed costs, they're very susceptible to small movements. I mean, I've bought shoes from Temu, for example, direct from China. They weren't very good, but
they came in the same bag as those garden gnomes, did they?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, so good. We've got, I think he's getting another one of your subscribers, Mr. K. Korn. He's asking about Sanderson Designs, which is, I think, is a similar thing to Laura Ashley, does sort of like very high-end furnishings like curtains and wallpapers, and I think it's got a franchise business that's doing pretty well. Came out with a trading update or some results which are pretty good. Shares actually, amazingly enough, this year are up about 50%.
Yeah, it's we quite like this. We think it's over the worst, and yeah, we had an update from Sanderson I think yesterday, didn't we? I'm looking at something. I'm looking at the wrong screen here now. Was it yesterday? It was very recent anyway. And it was pretty reassuring, I think. You got a bulletproof balance sheet as well. So, yeah, we quite like it. I'm not going to rush out to buy any myself. But I think that rise you can see on screen is justified, actually, by the company fundamentals, which have improved a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Where do they basically make quite a good? I mean, is America giving them the benefits?
I can't remember, Paul. But yeah, I know growth in America was one of their key strategies. They said we're just, you know, we're only scratching the surface of those potential markets in America.
Yeah. Good. Okay, excellent. Now let's go to Phil's asking about a micro lender that I know who's the Oak bloke quite likes is ASA International, which does micro lending in, I think it's Pakistan, Kenya. It's blah, blah, blah. The shares have done very well and it came out results this week, I think.
Yeah, I think that was this morning. Yes, we had a Q1 business update, basically saying it says the portfolio, presumably they mean the loan book, was 25% ahead year on year. So, I mean, the bull case here is very convincing, I have to say. You know, basically it's producing great margins, good cash flows, you know, very, very low PE. But to balance that, you know, it's cheap for a reason, I think, because you've got all these risks of foreign exchange, hyperinflation in a lot of the economies where it operates. Apparently the bulls, so I think, you know, I can see both bull and bear points on this one. And I think it looks quite interesting. Don't think I'd personally want to invest in something like this, but I was chatting in person to one of our subscribers who's very shrewd, David, he owns shares in this. He said it's interesting that they have a very low default rate because it's set up in all these countries like a club. So there would be a sort of, you know, you don't default against the club. It's like a community thing, apparently, or that's how it's sold, I think. Yeah, it is interesting. I did have a query over the balance sheet, though. I can't remember what it was now. I think the net debt figure that they disclosed didn't look right to me. When I looked at the balance sheet, I thought, this thing's actually much more highly geared than it appeared. So that would be my main cautionary point to people, would do double check that balance sheet, because I think it's not quite as good as the company made out. But I can see the appeal. Basically, PE of about 4 or something, isn't it? Good growth. I think it's paying divvies now, isn't it, as well? If you got a number on
that. Yeah, 5.3% apparently.
Yeah, so for value investors, this is, you know, this ticks all the boxes, doesn't it? Actually, very low PE, nice dividend yield, some asset backing, and growth. So yeah, I get why the bulls like it. Probably not for me overall, though.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'd remain cautious on it. And the reason is one, if this Iran war continues for longer, then a lot of those emerging markets, they are obviously oil dependent and power dependent. And there was a BBC article just yesterday, it was on the 6 o'clock news, talking about how businesses in India have been massively impacted. Now, I know they've come out of India, but they are in Pakistan, which is even worse in terms of the, you know, power problems they have there. And if businesses are struggling to get power, they're going to have to turn themselves off for 1 day, 2 days. This is going to put pressure onto the micro lenders, no doubt about it, because you're going to get increasing, you know, default. And then the other thing I would say is that actually they're lending to do their lending. They get finance from banks and from private, you know, basically private credit providers. If you actually look at their lending book, it's funded by about 60-70% through the banks, and then about 20% through these development organizations. You know, basically they're trying to do a good turn, but very little. I think they only take a small amount of deposits to, you know, in Pakistan, because they're not actually a deposit taker. So I would just say, look, if you start seeing any sniff of poor credit quality, delinquency, your funding line could potentially disappear damn quick.
We saw that with
Northern Rock in the great financial crisis. These wholesale lending rates just disappear.
Yeah, well, no, very good points. I think, that all sounds pretty. It's not for me. I wouldn't want to take on all those risks. You know, and the figures also, again, almost look too good to be true, you know?
I wouldn't go. Let's go to another one which has actually done really well. Ceres Power. I know we don't talk about it much, but basically the shares have gone to the moon. And ITM Power, these basically do like fuel cell electrolyzer technology that goes, that is able to power industrial applications through using natural gas or hydrogen to create electricity, to be able to do off-grid power supply for people, you know, like maybe data centers or whatever. Shares have just gone into orbit. I think they were less than a quid not long ago, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, no, both of these, as you say, Ceres Power and ITM, I mention them a lot in my podcasts where I just review the top daily rises. But unfortunately, you know, I'm just focused on value and GARP stuff. So I can't, you know, I just don't look at things that are pre-profitability. But I mean, both of now, I think, got market caps of over $1 billion, which is phenomenal, isn't it? So the market is voting that these, you know, have something really special there, haven't they? So, you know, well done to people who've looked into it and caught that huge move up. But yeah, not really anything I can meaningfully comment on beyond that, really.
Yeah, this week I think has been driven. One of their big, the world's biggest provider of electrolyzers and fuel cells is Bloom Energy out in the States, and it came out with blockbuster numbers this week, which sent both of them as you know, as a read across up into the moon. That's where you saw the big rise. And what they're using, I think, their fuel cells for, this is Bloom Energy, is to power the next generation of data centers. Because there is actually, and this could have read across elsewhere, there is actually a transition because of the power requirements of a lot of the GPUs is so intense. For the data centers, is that they're having to actually power the data centers now at a higher voltage, because it used to be at 400 volts and it's gone to 800 volts. And the reason is basically because if you can transfer the same amount of power using a lower amperage, because power is at volt versus with amps, and on that basis then you don't get as much heat, and you don't, you can have it, you do it as smaller and you don't need as much heating. So they're moving, they're shifting up to a higher voltage, which means that the whole supply chain producing these, you know, effectively data centers, power storage, like Ceres Power, ATM Power, that potentially they could do really well in powering off-grid sources for interruptible power sources for the data centers, which is what is getting investors excited, I think.
Yeah, no, it all sounds very interesting, but way beyond my pay grade, I'm afraid.
Okay. Well, we'll go to one which has done, the shares did brilliantly today, or about 20%, is Syntoma. Seems to be recovering. Heavily indebted chemicals business, but it does now seem to be getting its mojo back.
Yeah, well, I think the key news today, I think we had results. Me and my team looked at it first thing, and we were scratching our head because it looked like a below expectations, loss-making result. But then one of us spotted, obviously, the key news, which I think was about the bank facilities being refinanced. They had previously said, and this is the main worry on the share, it looked like it was going to be another Videndum, you know, just nosediving down to an emergency fundraise at a penny a share or something. It had that look about it, and that could easily have been the outcome, actually. But they did say, I think a couple of weeks ago, that they did not currently intend, I think was the wording, to issue fresh equity. So that gave the shares a bit of a boost. But then today came the news that the bank facilities have been refinanced with much, well, apparently with softer covenants, and they've been renewed to 2029. So this company's really pulled something out of the hat here, and well done to them for that. So yeah, with the debt, the risk from the debt now greatly reduced, there's probably not going to be any immediate anyway dilution. Although I did note that the Syntoma said that it was still keeping its capital structure under review, you know, so that kind of leaves the door ajar, doesn't it, to maybe a future equity raise at some point. And I think they also talked about potential disposals as well. So they do need to get that debt down, but the bank has basically just given them, you know, a three-year window and softer covenants, which is a terrific outcome for equity holders. So, yeah, up 16% earlier today. So, yeah, I think that's the main issue there.
Who was the bank? I mean, I'm just stunned. It's 4.5 times. Net debt to EBITDA, 4.5 times. I'm imagining, I would expect that to be double-digit interest rate on it. With a high admin fee on it, you know, initial sort of like, you know, to get the funding.
Yeah, I mean, it has got positive net tangible asset value, so maybe they've got a substantial amount of property and equipment that they can secure the lending against. I don't know, but yeah, they really do seem to have, you know, secured a pretty impressive outcome here. It could have been much, much worse. So I think that's the reason for the relief rally today, but not really a very good business. I mean, it's loss making on huge revenues, but it did say also Q1 trading is in line. So yeah, but that getting that bank, that really dangerous bank situation refinanced is a very good outcome, I think, in the short term anyway.
It's miraculous.
The
margins are 2.5%, and they must. I mean, a chemicals business. I mean, I don't know. If I was owning the shares, I'd be pretty questioning them on their input costs, because we know from the Iran war, petrochemical prices, oil, gas, energy has all gone up, and they must be a heavy user of energy, both on their raw materials, making plastics, and actually just the energy conversion. I mean, I would just say, hats off to them for getting that deal done. I'd love to know what the interest rate was on it.
Yeah, good point. I mean, it's a big amount of money as well. I think it was the debt was something like 500 or 600 million. So when you're extended, it's the bank that's got the problem, not the business.
Yeah, yeah, no, you're right.
Maybe that came into it. You know, maybe they just want to, you know, refinance it in order to buy time to work out a better, less risky position for the bank. So I wouldn't say. I mean, it looks like an emergency equity raise is off the cards, but I think it'll still need to raise substantial additional equity at some point.
Yeah. Okay. Just got a couple more. We got Helen asking about GB Group, basically, which is the identity, a location business. Also does ID identification. So to give you an example, if somebody like Revolut wants to confirm who a new customer is, then they basically do the clever technology that allows the customer to put its passport on and verify that that actually is them who are joining as a customer, and therefore going to get accounts just over the, you know, basically just doing it online. So they do that clever verification. Shares have actually recovered a bit after their results just recently. I think they suggested their turnaround in the States was starting to happen. Any quick thoughts on this one?
I like it. Yeah, I think you and I both like this one. I've been amber green on it for 6, 8, 9 times in the last year. So, yeah, I think it's a nice value share. Need to see stronger top line growth. I think that's the missing link. But and net debt greatly reducing. So, yeah, I think it's pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Good. OK, we've got one last one that I know you own is Interseed. Derek's asking about it. They won some contracts just recently out in the States, didn't they? Which seems to have given the shares a bit of a lift.
Yeah, I only had a small position in this that I've held for a long time, but I did take some profits a while back because the outlook was uncertain. But I've loaded right back up again to a full position size on this when it was sort of under a quid down at, I mean, at 80p, it was an absolute gift. Basically, it got sold off in the SaaSpocalypse. It's difficult to say, isn't it? They've also, the US government shut down, affected them last year, I think. And they've been warning, two profit warnings, I think. Oh no, that's a duplicate. We had a profit warning in March and the shares just went down and down and down and down. It's always difficult calling the bottom on this one, but I actually did manage to do that successfully on this one around about March or April when it hit around 80p, when, you know, the net cash was getting off half the market cap. It was, and management were at great pains to say, look, the contracts have not been lost. We've just got deferrals on some orders that are expected. And they're very good, trustworthy, capable management at Interseed. So, you know, some companies, they're permanently bullish. You just ignore the outlook comments. Interseed, it's worth, I think they can be trusted. And sure enough, the contract wins have now started to flow through again. And one particularly large one, actually, on the 21st of April, a $3.6 million upsell to a large US government agency. So I think it's probably now back into an earnings upgrade cycle. And it's still cheap. So, yeah, I'm very, very happy with Interseed.
Yeah, I think it probably needs to get bought by somebody else, because I know in cybersecurity software, this theme is having large corporates having one major, you know, cybersecurity provider to cover all bases. Now, they've got obviously a really strong position in this sort of ID credential type of software with the best clients in the world. They probably need to be part of a bigger group, I'm guessing. And that means, but that means, and there aren't many businesses which, you know, offer this, you know, that sort of level of sort of like single solution. I'd be stunned if they're not, you know, they should be bought out, these guys.
I mean, that would obviously have to be approved by multiple US agencies, wouldn't it, as they handle I mean, I think everything we're reading, if it's true about the AI's ability to hack computer systems on a sort of epic scale and with great ease. I mean, that is playing straight into Interseed's hands, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cybersecurity has got to be one of the best areas to be investing in right now. And you've just had a massive sell-off of the shares. Now it's on a paltry, you know, it's valued like a value, it's priced like a value share, stuffed full of cash. I think it's very, very attractive now.
Yeah, I just have one final one. We've got David asking about Skillcast, which is basically a software and services provider for regulation in the financial services area. So if a company basically wants to train their employees on know your customer and meeting all the regulatory requirements, they'd use Skillcast's software. I think it competes against the likes of Learning. There's a company called Learning Technologies. That's right. I was just trying to remember. So they compete against it. What's your? They came out with some quite good results, but the shares have sort of like dropped off. I thought this today. This
yeah, course. We like this one. I can remember it. It was this week, but I can't remember the details. I can't find it on my system. But yeah, we like it. We think it's a good business. Little bit surprised. I think the shares went off on results. That I'm pretty sure the results were ahead of expectations. Actually, weren't they? So yeah, I like this one. I think it looks a nice business.
Yeah, I think what's the valuation on it? I was just having a quick look.
It's quite pricey. Yeah, it's on. Is it? I've got a forward PE of about 25 times, and that is despite the shares having sold off. They peaked at about 78p back in February, and now they're 47p. It's still not cheap, but I think it is. I have a feeling it might be owner managed as well, which we really like. Quite small, only 18 million full cost revenues. But it's only 42 million market cap. So there you go. Price to sales ratio there, Paul, of just over two.
I was just looking at the margins. And I mean, it only does 12.5% EBITDA margins, 11% EBIT margins. I mean, it should be scaling that and it will happen. So I think that's why it looks optically cheap. If it, assuming that it continues growing in a highly regulated market, it probably, again, I think it's probably needs to be hoovered up by somebody else to be perfect. It's another big regulatory business.
Yeah, here we are. I've just found it. It's 59% owned by Vivek Dodd, the CEO. Right. So you're kind of along for the ride here with an owner managed business. But I can't remember any of the details, but I have looked at this quite a few times over the years. And I remember in my mind, I've just got it sort of parked in the, yes, we like that. We think it's a good business type of thing.
Yeah, it should have good recurring revenue streams. Mm. All right, then. Thanks very much, everyone, for your questions. Big thanks, Paul, for all your comments and insights. We'll just let you know, and in terms of timing, we're back to the 11 o'clock slot next Friday. I couldn't do that. I'm off to Krakow this
lovely. I'd be interested to hear what you think of that. I've heard it's very nice. I'd like to go there as well.
Well, apparently it's got all the history of the medieval times, 14th, 15th century. Then obviously it's synonymous with the Second World War because Auschwitz is fairly close. Got some salt mines. So yeah, we're looking at the weather forecast is nice. So I'll be having a few glasses of wine out there. So
enjoy yourself and I'll be interested to hear back about it.
Yeah. All right then, guys. Thanks very much and speak to you next week.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.